share what you're doing and what you need from your partner in this phase. Remember, you are taking care of your own needs so you can give to the people you love. Struggle. I know what you're thinking. Is struggle really necessary? I hate to break it to you, but there is bound to be some struggle at all the levels of the pyramid. You may learn that following a certain path is prohibitively expensive, or that nobody is responding to the way you chose to share your passion, or that you need to work on your skills far longer and harder than you anticipated. You might encounter unexpected hiccups. You might fail and have to start all over again. We can't avoid struggle, but the deeper we understand it, the more we can use it to grow. When you struggle, explain to your partner what you're going through. If someone knows why you're tired, distracted, or upset, they'll be better able to support you in the ways we talked about in Rule 4. Be careful not to label every challenge as struggle. There's always something to struggle over, but don't allow it to become your whole reality. When you keep a balanced view of struggle, you can learn and grow through it without letting it get the best of you. When you are going through a challenging phase, it's also important to remind your partner that it's not their fault. You can be open about what you need, but clarify to your partner that this is your burden, not theirs. In fact, if you're stuck and uninspired regarding your own purpose, it might be an ideal opportunity to direct your free time and energy toward your partner's pursuits. Later in this rule, I'll tell you how. This clear-eyed approach allows you to discover new ways to nurture your own independent purpose. You might help your partner build their online presence and realize that your calling is to be an online marketer. Or you might get involved in the design end of a partner's work and decide to study graphic design. Just remember, nobody is satisfied through another person's dharma. If one pretends to share the other's dharma, they won't be able to use their true gifts. Dreams don't have to be big. They just have to be yours. Win. Lewis Hamilton is Formula One Racing's winningest driver, with 103 wins and 182 podium finishes between 2007 and 2021. Each Formula One race lasts roughly 2 hours, and there are 23 races per season. That means that over 15 years, he spent about 683 hours racing. That doesn't count qualifying or practice time. To be a top driver in season, Hamilton also does roughly 5 to 6 hours of physical training per day. Over 15 years, that's about 13,300 hours spent working out. Now, let's say that when Hamilton wins a race, he spends about 10 minutes on the podium. That means that over 15 years, for all those hours spent training and racing, not even including practice, Hamilton spent about 0.1% of his time in the winner's spotlight. Don't trust my math? If you must know, I base this on 41,000 minutes racing, plus 800,000 minutes training, plus 1,030 minutes on the podium. Standing on the top of the podium is a rare pleasure. You're at the peak, and you're being recognized for it. This is the level we all want to live in. We want to sit on top of the mountain, having done all the hard work, and be acknowledged and recognized for what we've achieved. We want to just stay there. The most important thing to remember about winning is that it's a byproduct of the first four levels. You only get to win if you've gone through all four of the other levels first. So if you live for the award show, the followers, and the fame, you're going to be disappointed to discover that winning is rare and only accounts for a tiny fraction of the time you spend in your purpose. You have to love the lower parts. Life is not spent at the pinnacle. Those mountaintop events are only a tenth of 1% of the experience. Winners are still learning, experimenting, performing, and struggling. It's all part of the journey, and it's all valuable. Try this. Set goals together. Before you sit down with your partner to do this exercise, think about how you plan to present it. If you say to your partner, "Jay Shetty said we should answer these questions about our purpose every year, let's do it now," you probably won't get great results. Same goes if you lay it on them like an evangelical preacher. Don't rush to your partner to implement a new frequency or form of communication. First, digest these ideas on your own. Start quietly supporting your partner's purpose rather than announcing your plans to do so. Observe the effect it has on you, your partner, and your relationship. Share what you notice with your partner in a communication style that you know works for them. Once a year, set aside time to talk to your partner about your purpose and goals. You have to maintain your goals the same way you maintain a home. Every year, you clean the gutters, change the batteries and the smoke alarms, and take care of repairs. In a relationship, you check in on your purpose and how you both feel you're fulfilling it. You can have a dream together and a personal dream. Your goal might be to learn to paint, while your partner's goal might be to learn web design. Your goal together might be to learn to dance. What are you trying to achieve? Are you working to acquire a skill that serves your purpose? Are you looking for a job that is closer to your purpose? Are you trying to find more time for your purpose? What do you want from your partner? How can they help you fulfill your purpose? Do you need emotional support? Do you want them to help you fulfill other responsibilities so you have more time for their purpose? What does your partner want from you? Do you believe in their purpose? What ways can you think of to help them pursue it? When you maintain your home, there are also issues you have to address more frequently than once a year. You pay the bills monthly, change a light bulb when it goes out, or fix a leak. If a challenge comes up for you or your partner, make sure you discuss it together. Help your partner prioritize their purpose. Helping each other fulfill your purposes is so central to the success of a relationship that in the traditional Vedic wedding ceremony, it's the final vow. Together, we will persevere in the path of Dharma, righteousness, through this vehicle of householder life. This doesn't mean you take over their Dharma, it means you make room for it. Often in a household, it feels like there is only room for one partner's purpose. Studies show that men's salaries go up after they have children, while women's salaries go down. An article in the New York Times says that even when you control for hours, salaries, and other factors, the disparity is not because mothers actually become less productive employees and fathers work harder when they become parents, but because employers expect them to. In reality, as the Times reports, 71% of mothers with children at home work, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and women are the sole or primary breadwinner in 40% of households with children, according to data from the Pew Research Center. Employer bias is the only reason for the discrepancy. It's a problem, but all the more reason to make sure that if anyone in your relationship is a woman, she doesn't leave her purpose behind. The process of climbing the pyramid of purpose illuminates how we can help our partners. We see them on a parallel climb and use the lessons we're learning to give us patience and ideas for them. Help them learn. People often don't know where to begin. Watch for when they light up, when they spring to life in a conversation. Observe what brings them joy and what their strengths are. Then use what you see to encourage and affirm them. These insights help your partner accelerate their learning and experimenting. Remember to be a good guru. Don't be pushy or get mad at them if they don't follow your advice. They have to come to it in their own time and at their own pace. You can't force them. You can only be there for them as they figure it out. You aren't trying to get them to the next step in your journey, but to the next step in their journey. If your partner has interests but hasn't shaped them into a purpose, encourage them to explore without judging their path. We aren't born knowing our purpose or ready to pursue it. Help your partner to follow up on something they're curious about. You can book a trip to a museum or find books or TED Talks to help them explore what they're especially curious about. Take a look at your commitments and priorities and make sure your partner has the freedom to pursue their curiosity instead of, for example, expecting that they'll spend their spare time with you. When I met Radhi, it was clear that she loved food, and I encouraged her to explore that interest wherever it might lead her. People always told her, "You should open a restaurant," but I didn't impose my goals on her. I tried to support her growth by simply telling her to devote time toward learning and experimenting. I felt glad for us as a couple and for her alone to make whatever sacrifices it might take for her to pursue her interests. When we first arrived in New York, she started as an apprentice under an Ayurvedic chef. She went from there to teaching yoga, to getting her Ayurvedic qualification, to helping a restaurant build its menu. I didn't pressure her to choose a career goal or ask when her quest would end. When our partner is looking for their purpose, we support from the sidelines. We provide advice when asked, but let them make their own decisions. We don't accuse them of being unproductive. We praise them when they make progress. Don't say, "What's taking so long?" Instead say, "How can I help you?" Don't say, "You need to make a decision now." Instead try, "Let's set a deadline together that feels realistic for our home and life." Don't say, "Look at person X, they're doing so well." Instead ask, "Have you thought about who inspires you and might be a good mentor?" While your partner is learning, don't try to be their mentor. A mentor is skilled in the area where one wants to learn. The mentor has applicable experience and knowledge to guide them to ways they can thrive in their purpose, along with the willingness to help. Your partner is your partner in love. You are each other's guru, learning about yourselves and each other. But you don't have to be mentors or business partners. Instead, help them think of ways to connect with mentors and come up with questions to ask when they have a chance. Help them experiment. A friend of mine was interested in doing stand-up comedy. He was just getting started, and there was no way a club would have booked him at that stage in his career. So one night, his wife transformed their small urban garden into a stand-up club. She put out folding chairs for the guests, strung lights between the trees, and served popcorn. He came out and did a stand-up set for 10 friends. This was a fun and inspired way for my friend's wife to support her partner's experimentation. You can help your partner by creating opportunities for them to practice their passion and strengths. Maybe you have a friend in a related industry whom they can shadow. Maybe you have a connection who could help them develop their skills. Be an audience, help gather an audience, or help them with the aspects that are not within their skill set. Give them time and space. Inspired as Sal Khan was when he launched Khan Academy, he had bills to pay. His wife was just completing medical school, and they had escalating rent and a growing family. It seemed ridiculous to even consider quitting his safe hedge fund job to go all in on a nonprofit. But a friend kept calling to tell him that his purpose was not to be a hedge fund investor, but to help the world the way he'd helped his cousin. When Sal approached his wife about the idea, she was supportive, but concerned about their financial situation. Eventually, she recognized that Sal was having trouble focusing on anything other than the academy. They decided to dig into the money they were saving for a down payment on a house, and Sal quit his job. "It was incredibly stressful," Sal says. "I was waking up in the middle of the night in cold sweats." Finally, an investor came through. It was a major turning point for Sal, and today Khan Academy is one of the largest online learning platforms in the world. This is an extreme example, and I'm not recommending that anyone necessarily quit their day job. This would still be a success story if Sal had stayed at the hedge fund while tutoring or left it to found a company with moderate success. The point is that his wife supported him when he took a calculated risk. Sometimes it's hard to watch your partner direct their time and passion elsewhere. You may feel that your partner is fulfilled by their purpose, not you. "I think I should be more important than my partner's purpose," is the complaint I hear most often about purpose in a relationship. We want more of the attention our partner is giving to their purpose. But if someone gives us their time because we demand it, we don't get the best of them. Instead of pulling them away from their purpose, you can join them in their journey, whether they are learning and experimenting or putting their purpose into action. Also, remember that you won't feel competitive or envious of the time they spend on their purpose if you're satisfied in your own. As Albert Einstein said, if you want to live a happy life, tie it to a goal, not to people or things. Don't stop them, limit them, or make them feel bad about pursuing their purpose. Be patient when they struggle. We might grow frustrated when our partner struggles with their dharma, particularly if we don't agree with their choices and strategies along the way. If they want to quit or constantly change their approach or plunge recklessly forward, we have to be a good guru. When they share an idea with us that we don't like, we listen. We take time to feel gratitude for their honesty. We don't have to like it or accept it or think it makes them the world's best strategist. But we allow them to share. We pay attention. We observe carefully. We seek to understand instead of projecting our own desires and limitations onto them. If our partner doesn't think we'll understand, they won't open up or tell us the truth. Sometimes we are brusquer and more judgmental with our partners than anyone else in our lives. Treat your partner with at least the same respect you would give a friend or colleague and offer them mindful responses that help them grow their purpose. Helping your partner find their way isn't always easy. Sometimes it creates new tensions in the relationship. They might feel pitied or pressured, but those new tensions are better than the old ones. Because being depressed and confused and not knowing your dharma is worse than knowing it and struggling to make it work. When they don't make the progress that we think they should, we might try to manage or control them. We become frustrated when they don't take that meeting we set up for them or they don't attend an event where they might build their network. Sometimes we're triggered because their behavior reminds us of something we worry about in our own life. We might fear that we aren't succeeding in our career or purpose, and we're projecting our own fear onto our partner. The first step we should take is to check our own purpose. Are we fully engaged in it? Do we feel momentum? Focusing on it might relieve the worries you have about your partner. But other concerns might be coming into play. We might be going through the motions of giving our partner space while feeling scared that they're not going to deliver. Or we might be worried when we look at how they're doing in comparison to other people. All these triggers compel us to criticize and judge, which interferes with our partner's ability to grow. You don't have to hide your concern. In fact, you should share it. But share it with support and love, without imposing your standards or expectations on them. They may not be interested in or motivated enough to take action in this moment, and that's okay. Two of the ways we tend to share our concern are problematic for different reasons. Sometimes we try to force our partner forward. If your partner is miserable and wants to quit their job, you might freak out and say, "You can't do that. You know perfectly well that we can't afford it." When we do this, we're using fear and guilt to motivate them. Or we might swing in the opposite direction, saying what we think is the right thing to say without really meaning it. In this case, we sometimes use hyper-motivational language, like, "You're a superstar. You can do anything you want. You can make this happen tomorrow." But if you don't believe this, it rings false. Force is pressure. It blocks the space your partner might use to tell you that they want to move forward but aren't sure how. They can't be vulnerable and talk honestly with you. Contrived motivation expands the space artificially. Your partner might quit their job and stop working for a year. And when you ask why, they'll say, "Well, you said I could do whatever I want." Both of these methods, force and false motivation, interfere with your partner's ability to address the situation with you realistically. A gentle positive nudge is much more powerful than a fear-based argument or motivational push. A nudge says, "I appreciate that you're trying your best. Here's something else you can try." This nudge comes more naturally when you remove judgment and criticism from the dialogue, because now there is space for open, honest, vulnerable conversation. In this space, make sure your partner knows you're aware of what they're going through. Be patient with them. Recognize and appreciate their worthy efforts, no matter what the results have been. The tone of this conversation should be supportive. Remind them that they can handle challenges and that you are there to solve problems with them. You're doing this together. In the example of the partner who wants to quit their job, you can discuss in practical terms how both of your lives would be affected by this decision. Where will you need each other's help? How much time will you give to this experiment? How will responsibilities shift? How can you help carry their load to give them time and space to figure out what's next? You can brainstorm ideas for how to support each other. If they're going to be around the house more now, maybe they can handle cooking dinner, giving you more time to get your work done. The resolution of this conversation should be a set of commitments and agreements. You've assessed how the household and financial responsibilities will change. You've outlined any shifts you'll have to make in how you spend your time and money. Once you've hashed out the details, put a timeline on this decision. If your partner is quitting their job to reassess their purpose, how long will they take before they start looking for work? If you decide to give them 3 months, this doesn't mean they have to have everything figured out by then, but that's when you'll revisit the plan and decide what's next. Celebrate the small wins. If your partner went to the gym every day for 3 months, you wouldn't say much. But if they didn't go to the gym for that length of time, you'd point it out. That's generally how we operate. We complain when people are late, but we never thank them for being on time. When someone lands a job, everyone congratulates them. But when someone does the job, nobody congratulates them. When someone quits a job, few people see that as a step toward fulfilling one's purpose, but it often is. Instead of celebrating the obvious wins, watch your partner closely for efforts and successes that nobody else is positioned to notice. Recognizing them helps fuel your partner's drive and satisfaction. Show mindful love. When they share an idea that you don't like, encourage them to test it out on a focus group, run it past a mentor, or get real feedback from real people. When they complain about getting distracted, ask if they want to be accountable to you. You could let them know when they seem distracted or refuse to watch TV with them until they check something off their list. Note, I didn't say you should accuse them of getting distracted. It has to come from them. When they give up, give them time and space to mourn a setback and continue to share things you think might inspire them. Help them notice how far they've come so they can decide if they want to return to their efforts. When they want to take a financial risk, set up a meeting with your accountant or a financially savvy friend to have realistic conversations about the consequences of the risk and how it might affect both of you. When they let other responsibilities slide, you know things shift when people focus on their purpose. Revisit and reset commitments around the home so everyone's clear on how it will work in this phase and do so regularly. Two purposes collide. When children enter the picture, or for any reason you're trying to support and manage a busy household where both partners are trying to pursue their purposes, it can be hard to negotiate time. There's no right option or perfect balance of time spent on purpose, with family and running a household. But the more deliberate and communicative we are about our strategy, the more satisfied we'll be. Following are four different strategies for how to manage two purposes. You can set your purposes aside temporarily to prioritize earning and spending time with the family while your children are young and the household has financial pressures. You can prioritize one person's purpose. You can take turns prioritizing your purposes. Or you can go all in on both partners' purposes. Strategy 1. Pursue your purposes after hours. Often our purpose doesn't earn money or support the household. As a couple, we need financial stability, and if you can't fulfill your purpose through your job, then you won't be able to give it much time. This is actually where most people start, and it's a healthy place to be. Don't put the burden of financial bills on your developing passion. It doesn't need to carry the weight. Use mornings and evenings to build your passion. Remember, something that starts as a pastime can become part-time, and something part-time can become full-time. Starting out slowly and carefully gives you time to see how serious you are about your passion, exploring your options, and acquiring skills. Without sacrificing stability, you can put care and effort toward making your purpose central to your life and finding fulfillment through it. Strategy 2. Give one person's purpose priority. It's easy to say both partners should prioritize their purposes, but different people's purposes often run on different timelines. Choose this scenario when one person's purpose creates immediate and overwhelming demands on their time and energy, but make sure you mutually decide that their efforts will take precedence while the other partner manages the household. Often this happens when one person's purpose is also financially supporting the household. Even so, don't go all in on one person's purpose without discussing the plan explicitly. Sometimes one partner will demand that the other sacrifice their dharma. If the demanding partner earns more money, this might even seem like a reasonable position. They're supporting the household, so they think their purpose is more important. They may expect the other partner to pick up the slack at home, and hope or believe that to be a fulfilling purpose for them. But even if they are more financially successful, or further along in their career path, their purpose is not more important. Period. Just because you decide to spend a holiday with one partner's family doesn't mean you love that family more. Time is limited and something has to give. While we give one person's purpose priority in terms of time, we must recognize the sacrifice of putting the other partner's purpose on hold. If you choose to prioritize one person's dharma, you must discuss all the pros and cons and agree that this is the best for the household. Set terms that the partner who is making a sacrifice feels comfortable with, such as how long this will go on and how you will check in with each other to make sure that frustration and resentment don't set in. If your purpose gets priority and your partner takes on a role that isn't their purpose, treat that role with the same respect and accommodation as you would their purpose. When you're living your purpose, you may find yourself busy and less able to support your partner. But remember, you're the one whose purpose is fulfilling you. Purpose comes first, but this doesn't mean you should forget what comes next. You need to figure out how to follow your purpose without neglecting other parts of your life. You should be happy to be there for your partner. Recognize that they might not be as satisfied as you are, and compensate. Check in often. Revisit the arrangement you've made. Give them a chance to change their mind and be supportive when the time comes for them to step into their purpose. If your purpose is taking precedence, you may want your partner to be as enthusiastic about it as you are. The desire for enthusiasm might be insecurity in disguise. When we're insecure, we want everyone to validate our choices and tastes. Meanwhile, if you're the one who put your purpose aside, it's normal to have a number of emotions arise. You might feel competitive with or envious of your partner. You might feel frustrated about your own purpose. You might feel self-doubt. These feelings are normal, and they are tempered by knowing your own purpose. If you don't have time for it right now, look for ways to stay connected to it and keep your passion for it alive. You can turn to all the ways we talk about in this chapter, through books, classes, finding it while supporting your partner, finding it in the job you have to have right now. If you become impatient and think there might be a way to restructure the household, reopen the dialogue with your partner. If you feel neglected, first, diagnose why your partner seems to be focused on their purpose to the exclusion of the family. Are they immersed in their work? If you understand them and cherish their purpose, then you will see their commitment to it as a positive attribute. You will feel a sense of security knowing that they're focused on something deeply meaningful to them. Is it a personality trait or a choice rather than a necessity? Instead of demanding that they spend more time with you, ask, "Are you okay? Is there anything you're dealing with?" We need to meet them with compassion rather than criticism or complaint. If your partner is unable to spend time with the family because they are wholly focused on making money to support the household, then together you can discuss whether their family actually wants or needs that level of income, or whether the family would rather have their presence instead. It's all a question of energy or time. If the busier partner can carve time out of their schedule, work together to create meaningful experiences for the whole family. If they don't have time, they can still give energy by being present loving, and kind when you're together. Chasing a pursuit can be tiring. If they don't have energy for too many activities, you can make staying home together beautiful. Take the time to set the table nicely and light candles at dinner, even if you're eating takeout. Set up a spa day where the family trades massages and other treatments. Create a new holiday or tradition that you'll celebrate every year on the same randomly chosen day. Play a new board game. Google a list of conversation topics. There are also sets of cards that suggest interesting discussions, and have the whole family participate. If your partner isn't willing to do either, you need to communicate about it. If, on the other hand, your partner is overly busy with their purpose, out of an underlying desire to escape the family, nothing will be fixed by forcing them to be with the family. If you can't come to an agreement, use some of the techniques in the following chapter to work through your conflict. Sometimes partners default to this option because their purposes are on different timelines. When one partner hasn't figured out their purpose, they're often inclined to build their life around the one who has. My clients, Graham and Susanna, have been together for 20 years. When he launched a real estate business, she gave up her dream of running a yoga studio and helped him develop the business. He achieved his purpose, the firm is extremely successful, and she continued to work there even after he could afford to hire a replacement. From the outside, their marriage and work together looked like a brilliant partnership. But for 15 years, Susanna had been quietly mourning her unfulfilled dream of a yoga studio, even though she had never taken steps to pursue it. Serving Graham wasn't Susanna's purpose, nor was growing his company. Most of the time when we end up working on someone else's purpose, it's because we don't know what ours is or we don't know where to start. But it's never too late. Susanna's time wasn't wasted. At any point, she could tap into the skills she had acquired to pursue her own calling, whether it was that yoga studio or something new. When Graham finally understood how frustrated Susanna was, he encouraged her to open the yoga studio she'd always wanted. He offered to take a year off work to help her get it off the ground. But when she allowed herself to consider what she really wanted to do, she realized that there was a piece of the real estate business she'd fallen in love with. She decided to use the connections and skills she'd acquired to stage houses, preparing them with furniture and art to present them for sale. She worked with the selling agents she already knew, and her business took off quickly. Try this. Adjust a dharma imbalance. When your partner's dharma is taking up all the space in a relationship, you follow a similar process to the one I outlined for when your partner is struggling. Attend to your own purpose. Open conversation without judgment or criticism. Make commitments and agreements, and establish a timeline for revisiting the plan. 1. Focus on your own purpose. When you're frustrated with your partner's purpose, this is always the first action you should take. This is how you ensure that you aren't making your partner your purpose. 2. Communicate. Discuss why you aren't finding time for each other. You should not be competing with your partner's purpose for their time. You want to make room for their purpose, but what you can ask of them is their presence. 3. Make commitments and agreements. Together, decide what time each of you will devote to your purpose, and when it will be family time. Set boundaries and commit to them. 4. Define couple or family activities that make that time more valuable. For example, instead of watching TV together, find activities that are more interactive. On weekends, this could be something physically active, like a hike or another sport that both of you enjoy. It could be entertaining friends or family or volunteering. On weeknights, when time is at a premium, you could play games, cook together, or listen to or watch something that falls into the learning category of one of your purposes and discuss it together. If you have the energy, you could plan more activities, like listening to music or a lecture together, or find a new activity that you've never tried before. 5. Establish a timeline for the new plan you put in place. When would you like to touch base again to make sure you're honoring your agreements or to see if you need to make tweaks? Strategy 3. Take turns prioritizing your purposes. If neither of you is willing to sacrifice your purpose, but you can't afford the time or money to pursue both purposes full-time, one person can take a certain amount of time to focus on theirs, while the other one keeps the bills paid and/or manages the household. Then, after the term is up, the partners switch roles. In this scenario, if either or both of your purposes is your career, those careers might suffer. You might have to live more simply, but it will likely be worth whatever comforts you have to give up. Just make sure you carve out clear timelines and boundaries and commitments. Keith and Andrea each had a passion. Andrea wanted to become a naturopath, and Keith a competitive triathlete, and each supported the other's dream. Yet when they tried to pursue their passions simultaneously, they found they couldn't balance the time and commitment required to be successful in their chosen careers with the demands of parenting while also getting enough sleep and making enough money to keep their household running. So, they came up with a compromise. They would take turns. First, Andrea spent 3 years going through all of the intensive schooling required to complete her training. During this time, Keith became a teacher in the suburban Ohio town. While the pay wasn't great, it got rid of their massive monthly health insurance payment and allowed him to be home with the kids after school and on weekends. Andrea still worked reduced hours, so he wasn't paying the bills on his own. She was mostly able to do her schooling on evenings and weekends. Once Andrea set up her business and had built up a steady clientele, it was Keith's turn. He kept his job, but Andrea took over with the kids, and he dedicated his non-work time primarily to training. Now that each is established in their career, they take mini turns. For example, 1 year, Keith dialed down his training over the winter months so that Andrea could finish a continuing education course. Once his competitive season ramped up again, Keith was able to dedicate extra time and financial resources to training and race-related travel. Strategy 4. Go all in on both people's purposes. If both people are somewhat experienced and established, then you can take the opportunity to simultaneously pursue your purposes full-time. Income is an important consideration here. We must have stability to have a good relationship. Jennifer Petriglieri, who studies dual-income couples, says that in most of the press that you see about dual-career couples, it's presented as a zero-sum game. This means that one person gets more and the other person gets less. And while some couples do have this tit-for-tat mindset, successful couples have a mindset that is, rather than thinking about it as me versus you, about a conceptualization of we as the most important piece of the puzzle. According to Petriglieri, couples who invest themselves in each other then become invested in each other's successes and failures. The desire to see each other succeed then comes more naturally, and the compromises you have to make won't breed resentment. Going all in on both people's purposes is easy in one sense. Both people are putting their purpose first, both are fulfilled, and both are therefore well-positioned to give the other their best self, satisfied, and energized. But in this plan, as with the others, you'll have to make sacrifices. You'll have less time together, so you'll have to make your time meaningful. It's important to keep communicating, not about how busy each of you is, but how much you care about what you're doing. Each of you seeing your partner being purposeful will give you respect for each other. Try this. Do a time trade. You and your partner can ease the stress of two busy lives by giving each other the gift of time. Here are some different ways to trade time commitments with your partner. Take over a responsibility that's usually your partner's for a period of time or permanently. Create an activity that gets yourself and everyone else out of their way. Cancel evening plans for a whole weekend and both focus on the partner whose purpose needs more time. Pick a holiday and make it all about the partner who needs time. Watching your partner grow and being part of that journey is deeply fulfilling and exciting, as is your own growth. It's not always smooth, but it's a beautiful journey. When you're a part of each other's growth, you don't grow apart from each other. You can celebrate the successes together and be there together for disappointments. Of course, with two people prioritizing their own needs, conflict is inevitable. Our next rule will help us find the value in disagreement and how we can bring purpose to our conflicts. Write a love letter to your partner. If you want to create a lasting relationship, it requires you to dig deep. Take a moment to be open, honest, and vulnerable with your partner, to express what you're often scared to express. Communicate mistakes you've made without beating yourself up over them. Accept responsibility without feeling guilt and shame. Express love without feeling vulnerable and weak. Dear partner, I used to think that love was simple. I thought that one day I'd meet someone who captured my heart and that would be it. Next stop, happily ever after. But knowing you and sharing my life and my heart with you, I've learned that love is not the destination, but the journey. And it's not only the journey of us, it's not just our love story, but the story of love itself. Our relationship isn't just a romance, it's a becoming. Being with you, I have grown so much, and I love seeing all the ways that you continue to grow as well. And that is one of the things I love the most about being with you, seeing you blossom over this lifetime. In that simple definition of love I used to have, people fell in love only once and then just stayed that way. But as we both continue to evolve and explore, I find myself falling in love with you over and over again, each time a little differently, each time more deeply. I know that I'm not always a perfect partner. I don't always listen or attend to you in the ways you deserve. Sometimes I'm lost in my own thoughts, my own world. Sometimes I'm afraid to be vulnerable, to allow myself to open my heart to you and to be loved fully. Instead, I pick fights or shut down. Thank you for loving me in my wholeness, which includes my imperfection. And thank you for letting me learn to love you in your wholeness, which includes your imperfection. You are one of my greatest teachers, and I am so thankful for you. I will continue to make mistakes. I will continue to get things wrong. But I will also continue to love you. I am committed to being a team with you, to always being on the same side no matter what we're facing, and to embracing all of what life brings us, the challenges and the triumphs, together. Love me. Meditation for compatibility. We often think in passing of the people we love, rarely stopping to give them our full attention. We sometimes even take for granted the love we have for those who are in our lives regularly or whom we see every day. This meditation brings clarity and focus to our feelings and reminds us just what we love about them. You can do this meditation alone, or you can do it together with a loved one. And at the end, share what came up for you. Prepare to meditate. Find a comfortable position, whether that's sitting in a chair, sitting upright on a cushion or the floor, or lying down. Close your eyes if that feels good to you. If not, simply soften your focus. Whether your eyes are open or closed, gently lower your gaze. Take a deep breath in and breathe out. If you find that your mind is wandering, that's okay. Gently bring it back to a space of calm, balance, and stillness. Loving focus meditation. Take a moment to think about someone who is important to you. Visualize them, their face and form in front of you. See them smiling, laughing. Take a moment to notice your favorite qualities about them physically. Now, go deeper. Notice and acknowledge your favorite qualities about their mind, their intellect, and their personality. Consider their values. In your mind or out loud, express gratitude to them for all these things that make them who they are. See if you can come up with 10 things you love about them. And when you're ready, in your own time, at your own pace, you can gently and softly open your eyes. Part 3. Healing. Learning to love through struggle. Vanaprast is where we reflect on the experience of loving others, discover what blocks our ability to love, and work on forgiveness and healing. In Vanaprast, we learn how to resolve conflict so we can protect our love or know when to let go of love. In the course of overcoming difficulties in relationships or in finding ourselves alone again, we discover the possibility of bhakti, a deepening of love. Rule 6. Win or lose together. Conflict is the beginning of consciousness. M. Esther Harding. I was in a restaurant having dinner with a friend when the raised voice of a woman at the table next to us caught our attention. "Put it down," she said. Her date was rapidly typing on his phone. I said, "Put it down." she insisted. He ignored her for another moment, then finally rested his phone on the table. You have to give me a break, he retorted. The constant nagging is driving me crazy. Their voices fell back to normal volume, and my dinner companion turned to me. I knew he was a few months into a new relationship. He had told me he wanted to be in a real relationship with someone honest who took the time to understand him. Now, he said with pride, Eli and I get along so well. We literally never argue. Conflict has a bad reputation. It makes us look bad, to ourselves and to other people. We want to think we can be the couple who understands each other deeply and never fights. We're special. We're different. But no matter how compatible a couple is, to live in conflict-free bliss isn't love. It's avoidance. It's easy to gloss over disputes for the first few months because the new attraction obscures the cracks in your foundation. But to sustain a conflict-free existence means floating on the surface, where everything looks pretty, but we never achieve deep knowledge of each other. Those who avoid fighting may be calm on the outside, but often they're upset on the inside. They're afraid to talk about difficult feelings because they or their partner might get angry. They hide how they feel to avoid stirring up trouble. Keeping the peace often comes at the expense of honesty and understanding. And the converse is also true. Love built on honesty and understanding is deep and fulfilling, but not necessarily peaceful. Partners who avoid conflict don't understand each other's priorities, values, or struggles. Every couple fights, or should. Whatever you and your partner fight about, you're probably not alone. According to couples counselors, the top three areas of conflict are money, sex, and how to raise children. Woven among these big topics, we find the everyday fights about what to have for dinner, how to load the dishwasher, something your partner's friends said or did, or whether you were just flirting with the barista. My approach to short-term scuffles and long-term issues is the same, because I believe that often the bigger issues are at the root of the daily conflicts. This is why getting to the core of the issue is part of my approach. The Bhagavad Gita could be considered the ultimate guide to conflict resolution. It takes place on a battlefield. There are two armies, one good, one evil, about to go to war. A conversation takes place on that battlefield between Arjun, the leader of the good army, and Krishna, the divine, as Krishna helps guide Arjun. Krishna, in addressing Arjun's questions, answers many of those we ourselves face on the smaller battlefields of our relationships. First, we see that Arjun is reluctant to fight. This jibes with our idea of being a good person. We think if we do everything right, there should be no fights. This is an understandable aspiration. Avoiding all-out war is always the right thing to do. But we learn in the Bhagavad Gita that leading up to this moment, Arjun has already attempted countless negotiations, persuasions, and considerations. This war is the last resort. There will be damage and casualties. Things will be said and done that are painful and irreversible. This is why we should learn how to fight. We can avoid blowouts, somewhat counterintuitively, by fighting often. If we deal with disagreements as they arise, then we have a better chance to resolve issues before we say things we don't mean and end up feeling worse, without having resolved anything. The first time your partner leaves their dirty socks on the floor, you might be slightly annoyed, but throw them in the wash. The second time, you remind them to put their socks away, but it's become a problem. The third time, you might ask them what they could do to change the habit. The fourth time, you might say, "Okay, we need to talk about your sock issue." A small matter like dirty socks becomes a flashpoint because the more time those socks spend on the floor, the more discord they create. When Krishna, representing all-knowing and goodness, advises Arjun to go to battle, the divine affirms that even good people must fight sometimes. The enemy, Arjun's cousins, has been increasingly aggressive. They have poisoned the food of Arjun and his brothers. Another time, they built them a castle out of wax, which looked beautiful, but they set it on fire when Arjun and his brothers were inside. Their cousins have been trying to destroy them. The last straw is when they attempt to undress Arjun's wife in front of a group of people. Ultimately, Arjun realizes that to let leaders like this take charge will harm the whole world, and he must act against them. Arjun isn't just fighting over the violation of his wife. He's not fighting